personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petso Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petso, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petso Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petso.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown and I are filling in again this morning for Dave Petso. What a beautiful day.
It is. Awesome day.
Yeah. So we're talking a little bit today about what differentiates success from non-success and being financially successful versus not, the characteristics of what to do. What leads me to one of the biggest ones is discipline. So Tom today is actually going to be competing in an Ironman after this, and he's doing the running part, which that's what I'm talking about, discipline, the time and effort to work and then go run and then compete in an Ironman, not just for fun. So why would you do that?
Well, you know, as you know, I hurt my Achilles last year. I ruptured it in about this time last year, a week from today. And my wife said, you need to do something to get back to, you know, to recover, fully recover.
It's her fault.
So she said, why don't we do this? And it was something when it was 6 months ago. I mean, oh, yeah, sure, that'd be great. And although I've run some marathons and run a lot in the past, you know, today's going to be a different deal because instead of doing the whole triathlon, I'm just doing the running part. She's doing the biking part. We have our neighbor Craig that's doing the swim. And so it'll be interesting because this is completely different. She's going to start biking in about 3 hours, 4 hours. And I don't even show up to where I need to run to meet her for another 6 to 7 hours. So
oh, wow.
I'll be hanging out at the house while she's out on the road.
That'll be fun, though.
It will be. I'm glad it's a little cooler than it has been the last few days because I don't like running in the heat, and running it when it's 95 to 100 would be a little tough.
And you're doing a half, right? Half marathon?
Yeah, half marathon,
so
13.1.
Yeah, not a short
run.
And
the great thing about it is I'm the one that crosses the finish line. So they do all the hard work.
And you get all the glory.
I just do a casual walk in the park, literally, and then I get all the glory in the pictures.
Good, good. Well, what we'd like... there's a lot of different success stories, and I think the interesting thing about Boise, I was at a conference this week, and the more I travel, the more I realize what an amazing place this is. But someone asked us at that conference, what is the draw to Boise? Is it employment? Who's the main employers? What do people do that live here? And we really started to think about that, and it's interesting that there's not really, I mean, we have the big employers, we have the Microns, we have the HP, we have Albertsons, we have some of those. But other than that, a lot of us success stories are self-made people,
right.
Business owners, just people that do it on their own. Right. So what we thought is we started to look a bit because there's a lot of information out there recently on what differentiates successful people from not so successful people. What are their characteristics? That's why I brought up the discipline. What do they do differently than everyone else? So first of all, we'd like your stories to tell us what you feel, how you've become successful, what you do to just make a difference. So give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or shoot us an email, petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net. So first, we're going to walk through a few steps that we think it takes to become, well, wealthy, or maybe you want to say it this way, just to become a millionaire. So why don't we walk through a few of these, and maybe you can add in as we go.
Of course.
So the first one, I think, and the most important, is to have a plan. I know we're financial planners. That's what we train in. But if you don't have any idea where you're heading, how do you create a roadmap to get there?
Right. We never go anywhere without looking at a map to see how to get there, what it's going to take, and so forth. So why wouldn't you do that with your finances?
You head into a new city. You don't just jump on and go, I'm just going to go with the flow and hope this works out. You have to have an idea of where you're heading.
Yes.
So that's where financial planning comes in, and we feel it's super important. A lot of people, we don't do a lot of big, elaborate, here's a book to take home with you that you never open up again, but having an idea of, I want to retire at this age. I want to send my kids to school. I want to be a millionaire by the time I'm 50. There's got to be some desire that you have. Then you have to lay out the financial plan to get there.
Right. And I think it's interesting that people can naturally come to this conclusion when they're doing something like traveling on a trip. But it seems so hard, and for me personally, to sit down and think about a financial plan. You know, I think we procrastinate for two reasons. One is we don't really know for what it would take to get to somewhere and what's possible. And the second thing is we don't really want to see where we're at now. You know, something when you're going to go on a trip and you go, hey, I'm in Boise, that's easy. But to sit there and actually go through the numbers and actually figure out, you know, where you're at as far as your personal finances, sometimes we're a little scared to see what the numbers are going to show us.
Or sometimes I think people don't feel like they have enough to worry about it. We're not even at the point in our life with what would a financial plan do for us? We're just barely getting by now. Actually, you should look at it differently. If you're just getting by now, you really need a financial plan to figure out where you can trim, where you can structure, what you can do to get to those goals, or you'll never get there.
Right. And a lot of this, you know, the things you read and so forth, that it isn't about, you know, a certain dollar amount or anything like that. It's about our habits that we're trying to form. And if we form those habits early and just keep those same good habits, then whether it's a few hundred dollars or thousands of dollars, we are doing the same thing each time. It manifests itself into more wealth just because we're doing the same things over and over.
Waiting to get started, though, is probably the most costly mistake people can make. Even if you can only afford a little bit and then you put a little more in all the time, you have to remember that you are an investment. You are an investment to yourself. And the only way you can do that is to feed yourself, give yourself a little extra money, pay yourself first, as we always say, a very simple rule. Put a little bit away every paycheck, and the compounding from day one will be so much greater.
Right. You put a little bit away when you're younger, or you're going to have to put a lot away when you're older.
Right.
And so the lifelong learning process, we're going to be talking about later about how to help your kids become better with their finances. And that getting those processes started, those habits, and understanding how money really works early is really the key to the whole thing.
I don't know how many times I've met with people that just sit and look at their investments now because they've been saving for so long. And the first thing they say is, I never thought I'd have this. I never thought there was a way in the world. I just realized when I first got into my first job and I had that 401k, I put 2% away. The company matched 2% or whatever it might be. And then it was like, now I put away 3%. Pretty soon I'm putting away 10. And then when they retire, it makes sense of what happened. You won't miss those small percentages.
No. In fact, you know, a personal story between us, a client, I was looking over their stuff the other day, and I just happened to noticed that they, you know, had done pretty well. You know, I'm not going to give an exact dollar amounts, but pretty well for their age. And I didn't know them personally, but they've been one of Dave's clients for a long time. And I just said, so did he inherit some money along the way? You know, how did he get here? And you said, no, he's just always been a saver.
And that's the fun part about this, is you can be successful even if you don't make $1 million a year. Maybe you don't make even $100,000 a year. A lot of clients that we see never did. They just put money away and saved.
Yeah. Success is always personal. It doesn't matter what the person next door has done and how much they've amassed. It all is about you and how much you're going to be able to do for you and your lifestyle. And you need to determine where you feel that that's comfortable and what's successful.
Sometimes the question, too, is what is a financial plan? What does it entail? I think it's a little different for everyone. Some people just say, you know what, I need to know how much money I'm going to need to retire. So we say, well, what are you spending now? And you try to back into that number, adjust it, of course, for inflation, and try to figure out that piece. Well, I want to pay for all my kids to go to college. Well, how do you do that and still afford to retire? All these different things that come up. So everybody's financial plan is slightly different. So every time you talk about it, you say, where are we on this? Are we getting there? How close are we to getting there? And it's very different depending on each person.
Right. But there are some things, some basic things that people should do. And I know we've talked about this before. We had a couple programs about this in last year. But the first thing, you really need to know where you're at. Like I was saying, if you're going to leave on a trip, you know where you're beginning. We need to know where we're at. So the first thing to do is calculate your net worth. It's not a really a hard calculation. You just basically add up everything that's worth something, and you subtract out everything you owe. And hopefully that number that you come up with is a positive number.
Some are negative.
And then you know where you stand, though. And knowing where you're at is so important, because if you're going to get somewhere, you got to start have a starting point. So figuring out that net worth, you don't need to, you know, spend a lot of money on fancy programs and all this kind of thing. There's a lot of free programs out on the internet you can use. But if you want to, you can write on a notebook. You can use a spreadsheet. It doesn't take a lot. I use a spreadsheet to calculate mine, and it works just fine.
And there's always apps for everything. Yeah. I pulled up a couple. One's called, don't much about it, but I just pulled it up right off of the Apple website, and it was called iWealth. Very simple. You put in an asset, says, what do you think it's worth? And the next step says, what do you owe against it? And then it goes on, and it breaks it down by mortgage, autos, credit cards, anything that you have. And then at the end, it hits a button, and it says, this is your net worth. And then it will chart it for you. So you can actually have a little map that you just update those figures all the time, and it tells you how you're doing. Very simple, because some people in the tech age will do that, and they may not keep track of that piece of paper. But whatever it is to keep you on track works great.
Right. And then update that. Nothing gives you better help as far as knowing where you're at and where you're going if you don't check to make sure you're on the right path. So at least once a year, I would say, sit down and update the numbers. Some people do it quarterly. I do it quarterly, but, you know, that isn't for everybody. I just do it because that's what I like to do. But at least annually to see if you're moving in the right direction. And when you do see the numbers start changing, that can give, especially in the right direction, that can give you a lot more confidence that you're actually gaining ground.
Then there's another more recent app that I just saw come out, too, that I look at, just because some of this is very helpful for people. And it's a Dave Ramsey app, and it's helping with budgeting. And it's called Every Dollar. I haven't dug into it too deeply, but, we're in a very tech era, so it's very easy to go in and just input this as you're at the grocery store. I think it even allows you to scan items. It's very, very easy.
And actually, since it started, it came out about a month and a half ago, when they launched it, and I was actually listening to the podcast when they launched it, and it follows his philosophy of your monthly budget, you should spend every money, all the money in it. You should allocate it somewhere, even if it's in the savings. And the every dollar is based upon those principles that he teaches.
Yeah. Which the one thing he always says is every dollar should have a name. We've heard him say that over and over again, and if you don't know where that dollar went, you need to go find out, because you don't want things just filtering and just disappearing.
Right. And again, this takes diligence. It isn't something that happens automatically, but it does help with the basics of knowing where you're at. Because if you're spending a bunch of money that isn't going toward your ultimate goal, then that's wasting money. And if it was a priority to set that goal, then you need to line your money up with that priority instead of going, I want to retire in 20 years, but I want to spend $400 a month on cigarettes and coffee.
Right. All right. We're going to take our first break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about some other traits and characteristics we have noticed and found with clients, just anyone out there that is a good saver, and how they become that. But we want to hear from you as well. So give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Again, we want your call, so please call us at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or you can shoot us an email. Sometimes people enjoy that better, and they don't really, sometimes they don't want to call in. So it's PetsoFinancial at PetsoFinancial.net. Good morning, Jack.
How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Say, I just wanted to call and encourage Tom today on his marathon.
Oh, thank you.
Also, I wanted to let the listeners know how important it is to have good people like you guys to help with your finances. When you think you can figure it out on your own, sometimes it doesn't hurt to get second opinions. And you guys, you know, have been a real blessing in my life. All you guys, Dave, I started with Dave, and Tom's kind of helping me now. And you know, I've had some challenges in my life, and if I would have done what my instincts were, I would be in a pretty financial, stressful situation. And I just wanted to thank you guys again on air. And, you know, the dividend thing is such a huge thing for me. And it always seems to come at a perfect time when I need that extra little bit to get me through. And also, ability to save more. So just kudos to you guys. Keep up the good work, and thanks a bunch for what you do.
Thank you.
No problem. Thanks, Jack.
Okay, see you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
So that he brought up a couple good points there. You know, our instincts, human instincts, will not mesh with our financial plans very well a lot of times. New house, new cars, going on fancy trips when they don't actually fit within the plan can really be detrimental. And I think that's our biggest deal is as we go through life, we get pulled, you know, we get greedy a little bit and we look at things that, hey, I want that, I want this, and I don't want to have to wait to save. And being patient and depriving ourselves a little bit of instant gratification is a huge part of this.
It is. But it's a hard world now. Everything is so instant. The news, data, everything. We talk about social media and how it used to be a kid would have an issue, they'd head home and they'd sleep on it, wouldn't even talk about it, and now they tweet about it, they text about it, and it's like everything is instant.
Yes. Life is so fast now. Everything's faster.
Yep, we're not.
Except for my running, which will be slower this afternoon, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it's interesting. But one of the things, let's talk about how to be a saver. How does it start? How do you start to put money away? And it may seem like a never-ending uphill battle. People say, oh, my goodness, I've been putting money in my account now for a year, and I've only got a couple $1,000s. Well, that's the start. And then those couple thousand compounds and a couple thousand compounds, and pretty soon 10 years from now, you're thinking, oh, wow, how did I get this?
Right. And you know, what we find, it isn't, and just like Jack mentioned there, and it was really, he goes, you know, it's funny, it's just like, If you keep doing the right things, all of a sudden it just works out somehow. But if we just sit there and we're waiting for that perfect moment to put a bunch of money away, or that one time where you're going to buy that stock at the right perfect time, it just isn't going to happen. You have to be diligent. You have to build that habit of being a lifetime saver, and that becomes a priority. And if we're doing things like buying cars or doing whatever, and that starts saying, well, we're going to have to cut back what we're putting into the 401k. We're going to have to cut back what we're doing in the Roth. Then you can't afford that. It doesn't fit the plan. And so that's one of the core habits, obviously, of building up wealth is putting some money away so it can work for you.
And don't take it back out.
Right.
We've had a couple instances, and this is the one that we'll do anything we possibly can to stop people from doing this. But ultimately, it is your money, and we can't stop it. But we have calls where people will put money into a simple IRA, which allows you to take the money out if you need to because it's your account and then an employer has no control over the takeout. But they'll pay a 25% penalty because you have to be in a simple for 2 years before it goes to 10% penalty for under 59 and a
half.
Just
a 10% penalty.
Yeah, just 10. So it's 25 before that. And then it's ordinary income tax. So a lot of times you lose literally half the money just to take it out, and then they start it over again, and they do this over and over again. Retirement accounts are not savings accounts.
Right.
There's nothing you're going to have to take care of yourself later if you continue to put money in, pay an enormous penalty to get it back out, and then start over again.
Yeah, that's a symptom of obviously an overspending problem. And, you know, people do get in situations where they're, you know, on the edge of, you know, where they just don't have any alternatives. They're going to take the house, their, you know, medical costs, whatever. But I would say that those are fewer and farther between. And usually in these cases when people are doing this, they never mention anything about all this or that. It's all, you know.
Wants.
Yeah, it's like, yeah,
I want
again,
a car.
They
I
don't
want
say
a boat.
What it
I
is.
Want a, yeah, and if they don't share, then you know that it's not really an emergency, if it's something going on in their lives that's big, they want you to know because they don't right. want to take the money out.
Right.
The ones that do it routinely are the ones that you know are just spending the money.
Right. And there's a cop-out, and I must say that probably everybody's used a cop-out and justify bad behavior in their past. They just it's human nature to try to, you know, not have someone feel that you're making a mistake. But, you know, people will always go, well, I'm going to take this money out just this one time, and we're going to pay off the credit cards, and we're going to get all done, and then we're going to put all the money back.
Yes.
And I understand that feeling. It completely makes sense, you know, just that clean slate, just being done with it. It's just so much, and taking $50,000 out and just writing a check and being done, it makes emotional sense. But as far as your financial plan, it's just a huge mistake.
Large sums of money don't come around a lot. So if you work to build them up and then you pay off consumer debt with that, and then you say, oh, well, I'll just put the money back. Well, that 50,000, just rule of 72, right? If you get 10%, 7.2 years, it'll double. 50 becomes 100, or you're putting in $100 a month. Are you ever going to get that 100,000?
Right. And I have yet had people put it all back in.
I've had yet to people put it in for a couple of months, and then all of a sudden the budget's tight because that's why they had credit cards to begin with.
Right.
And if it's not painful to pay off debt, it's super easy to build it back up again.
Right.
And it's also super easy to stop those payments to a retirement account because now you're trying to be responsible and put
right.
the money, you know, not build up credit card debt and then have to take it out again. But you've just defeated the whole purpose that you had that retirement account
for. And the thing is, it's logical to me. Emotionally, it's I can understand it, like I said. But, you know, if you think about it, in what we were talking about the other day, approximately 48% was what was going to be withheld in taxes.
From that simple distribution.
48%. So, and obviously I'm not recommending this either, but if a credit card, you could find a credit card out there that probably is around 10%. And so it just doesn't make sense. You're going to pay 48%, which is the cost of money, or you're going to pay 12%, which is the cost of money. The 48% is on something that could have grown in the future and become more, so that 48% is really more than that. So now your cost of money is actually extremely high, and it's all because I wanted to X.
Right. I wanted a great, little better trip. I wanted this new gadget, and don't get me wrong, I like gadgets too, but I'm not going to pay for them with my retirement assets.
Yeah, you don't pay a long-term asset and pay a penalty to do something like go on a trip or buy a new car or buy a motorcycle or even in an investment that is very speculative.
Right.
I'm going to go into a business with my brother-in-law, right?
Yeah.
And he says this is the next greatest thing. We got to get in right now. That's very risky, and very few small businesses actually pan out. So you're taking something that has some risk, and you're taking the money, paying a penalty, and then putting it into something that has a lot higher risk.
Right,
it just
right.
doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. So when we get back, we're going to take a break now, but when we come back, we're going to talk about ratios. How much do we really think you should be saving? And how do you go about starting that and just making it a habit? But we do need phone calls at 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are here today filling in for Dave Pezzo. We're talking about characteristics of, I guess, financially successful people, or do you want to have $1 million?
Right. You know, this started, I had this idea when we were doing the radio program a month ago or so, and I actually was listening to a podcast that Dave Ramsey did on his radio program. It wasn't a podcast. It was just an archive, one of his programs, and he did an hour interviews with self-made millionaires and what the characteristics, what telling their story of how they got there. And I thought it was very, very encouraging, very exciting to listen to these people that just basically did it themselves and didn't have to wait around for someone to give them money or wait around for them. They just went out and did it themselves. And I thought, what a great thing for us to do is to start kind of echoing that sentiment of how people can just do this all on their own and the different habits and stuff we can use to techniques that we can use for people to do that.
Right. A lot of times when you read about people that are very successful, they're business owners, people that have created their own path. And a lot of times not everybody's made to own a business, but as we were talking before the show started, you can be business owner minded. That
right.
means everything you do, you think about how does this affect the bottom line.
Right.
We laugh because Tom said the other day he left the office and he was almost quite a ways from the office and he went, oh my gosh, I don't think I locked the door. So he turns around to go back to make sure the door is locked. I know that sounds very basic and, oh, everybody would do that. But, you know, I don't know that everyone would.
Right.
It's the thought of how do we make sure that everything's done right? Well, do we buy paper clips when we can keep using the same ones over and over again? Because you know what? They really never break unless,
right.
You can keep using that. How much paper do we use? Do we print in color? Do we print in black and white? What is the ultimate bottom line to the business?
Right. And all those little things you can do. And this is not just business, but, you know, everything you can do to find out those little things. That's what financially successful people do. They pay attention to the little things, and it isn't like they dwell over them, but they sit there and they make sure that everything, they're not wasting excess money on things that don't add any value.
And the funny thing is it translates to your personal life.
Yep.
If we're, however you think, maybe you're more careful at home and that goes to work, or maybe all of a sudden you are at work and you're thinking, well, how's the bottom line? I'm seeing these numbers and they're not quite good enough. It's interesting what changes the focus.
Right. And reemphasize what you're saying about people and being employees but acting like they're self-employed. You know, what can you do yourself to become a better employee? That if there's going to be a promotion, that it's a no-brainer that you're going to get it. If there's going to be a raise, that you make it so easy for them to, like, we just want to pour more money on you because you do such a great job and you go out and you take extra classes and you've got different things that help make us better as a company. Those are the things where you can have that self-employment attitude even if you're not self-employed.
And that's where wealth is created too, because then you look at your home budget and you say, you know what, I need to put more into retirement as I'm going through and I just calculated my net worth and I want to be a millionaire in 10 years. Well, I'm at $500,000 now. Is that possible? What would it take to do that? Well, it should be, I mean, if you're at that point, it should be fairly easy to do so, but how quickly do you want to do these things? Where do you cut the budget? What do you, maybe you don't go out to eat five times a week. You go out to eat one time a week. It's very simple to trim a budget.
It is, and my mother always told me the easiest place to cut back is food, and I think that's where trip a lot of people up because they just, it's so much easier to go out or order, and obviously, restaurants and so forth that make it a lot easier to do that.
Yes, they do. And if you don't enjoy cooking, not
right.
that I'm speaking from me at all,
but she
it's
is.
Very easy to want to just go grab something.
And if you have kids and you're really busy,
yes.
then it's easier to take that cop out and say, we're just too busy. I'm just going to drive through somewhere.
Yeah, just this one time. Oh, and then to tomorrow too, maybe.
Right.
I don't know. But, again, let's talk about how much. What percentage do we think that you should be putting away just to start? This is a starting figure. This is not long-term because if you're behind, adjust the figures. Just use some common sense on where you need to bump it up. But live on 70%. Put 20% into a put-and-take account, which is a savings account that you're going to use for roofs, medical, car breakdown, life, things that happen to everyone. And then have a 10% that goes into long-term retirement that is not your money. That is a bill that you have to pay every month, and you don't get to touch it.
Right.
And increase it.
Right. And that's why getting back and reviewing these numbers every year at least makes you make sure you're reassessing where you are, because maybe your income has drastically gone up or gone down and so forth. So making sure that you're staying on track and so forth is very important.
And make the small changes, really. It will make a huge difference. And then talk to someone. We're all so emotionally attached to our money, we don't know what to do. So now you have 70% that you're living on, you're saving 20, and you're putting 10 away. The most common question that I think I get is, well, I have this money sitting in my put-and-take account. Well, what am I going to do with it? I need to get some interest on this.
Right.
But it's not meant for growth.
Right. It's that type of savings, and this is quasi what is being called an emergency fund or part of emergency fund, I should say. And it isn't there to make money. It's there as an insurance policy against short-term losses that you don't want to have to insure. So it isn't there to make any money on it. So, but we get that question all the time. I got this money sitting in cash, and I just want to earn more on it. Don't you guys have something we can earn something more on this? I want to earn something. Mm-hmm. And it's usually the husband, because he's driven more by wanting to see more profit on the balance sheet or on the income statement. And but the security of that allows you the ability to invest the way you need to. So when we're talking about investing long-term retirement, where, you know, we're going to come up with a number, you know, you shoot for 10%, trying to put away 10% long-term in retirement, that you can't do that if you're constantly having to stop to pay for something that's come out of the blue. So this reserve, this insurance policy, this emergency fund allows you that ability to invest the right way and stay with the plan instead of just starting and stopping.
Right. But another thing to add to that is if it gets really big and you never see yourself taking anything from it, you also have to look at the value of having maybe some of that move to an investment.
Right.
Because they do get too large sometimes.
Yeah, and that's a great, great problem to have.
Right. Okay.
So you figure it out. So, you know, like there's a ratio that is used, and there's quite a few of these, but it's called the liquidity ratio. But basically it's the one that says how much savings do I need to have on hand and how much, you know, a guideline for that. And how I help people say that is that if you have a good job or a good business and you have income and it isn't something that you're worried that you're going to lose your job next few months or there isn't cutbacks or anything and it looks pretty solid, then 3 months worth of expenses is probably just fine. If you're a contractor or something, you get laid off quite often, or you just don't feel very confident in your income, then having more closer to 6 months probably would be better, just to give you more of a cushion, long-term cushion, in case you don't have income coming in for a while.
All right, we need to take a break. So please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436.
And welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzel this morning. We would love a phone call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. When we left, we've been just talking about characteristics of being financially successful in your life. And funny thing is, they're very simple things that we have to do, little adjustments that we have to make. There's nothing that you probably haven't heard a million times over from us, from Dave, from anyone else that you talk with. But it's just the doing them that's the hard part.
Yep, following through. It's the easiest, hardest thing we can ever do.
Yep, it truly is. And we say it over and over and over again, but people really do have a hard time cutting back what they spend. So if, and all the kids out there that I'm sure are listening, and this is going to go to educating the kids.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of kids.
Yeah, I know mine are. They're up just chomping at the bits for their financial news. But if we just taught them instead of, you know, college is a tough time. You don't have any money. You're living off ramen noodles, and hopefully you're struggling, because that's a great lesson to learn, that it is hard and you don't have everything covered for you. But struggling a bit is good. So then all of a sudden you get a job and you actually have a real paycheck, more than minimum wage, more than, you know, $100 every couple of weeks. You actually have a real paycheck coming in. If you live on 70% of it, I mean, seems very simple, right? Are you going to miss the 30 of 100 more than you ever thought you would have? Just put that aside.
Yep. You know, it's funny, and I'm not sure who said it just recently, a financial guru or something out, it was on the internet, said, people could be financially successful if they did only one thing. It would be live as they did in college. So if they could just cut back to the, even below the bare essentials, it would seem like you would, and then save the rest for a long period of time. Or it doesn't have to be a long period of time if you're doing that. If you're making $100,000 and living on $20,000, you'd be able to get there pretty quickly. Now, that isn't probably conceivable for most of us. But if we get that mindset, that is the key.
Well, so money is, I know what we're saying is save, and people are thinking, why in the world, what do we work for? We went to school, we get a job that pays us well, and now we're supposed to live well below our means, and we don't have any money to enjoy. Well, that's not what we're saying either. What we're saying is just be responsible with what you have. We all have things that we love to do. We all have hobbies. I mean, If you like to golf, it's not a cheap hobby. If you like to run, you need good shoes. If you like to ride bikes, you can't have the cruddy bike that's going to fall apart, or you can't go 56 miles that Tom's wife's going today. You have to have good equipment to be able to do some of these things.
You know, that's funny. It's funny how these kind of things come up in your conversation. My wife is naturally frugal, and we were taking her bike up to Lucky Peak last night because they're stashing all the – you take everybody that's going to ride, you take the bike up the night before, and they have them up there. And then when the swimmers get done, they jump on the bikes. And we were walking along and talking. You would see these guys that are really into triathlons, and they have these bikes that are just like – they look like something out of Star Wars. I mean, it is amazing. And she's going, you know, that's a $5,000-$7,000 bike.
Right.
And she goes, my bike, I got it, Sports Replay for $75. She goes, the seat on my bike cost almost twice as much as the bike did.
Well, you got to have a good seat. Come on.
Right. Yeah, especially if you're going to be out there for a while.
Right.
So it's you. Everything that we do, we could spend, you know, fly fishing, all those things. You can spend a lot of money, or you can live below your means as far as whatever that sport is concerned.
And the funny thing about that is I bet you Aaron's bike gets to the finish just as well as those $7,000 bikes.
Yeah. And for her, it's going to work just fine.
Right. So
because she isn't out there, we're not going to be, on the front page of the Statesman tomorrow. And we know that. So why spend the money as if you are?
Right, exactly. That's the main thing right there. If you're doing something for a hobby, do you need the best possible equipment that they make? And you go out there and you hit a ball on the golf course and you're horrible. I mean, did you really need the best golf set you've ever seen?
Right. I'm sure that I could play just as well with the neighbor's yard sale set right now that I could ever do with anything with a high potential, the newest technology, you know, thing. It just... I don't have the skills to even utilize that technology, so why spend the money on it?
Right. So those are the small things. And again, we're talking small things, easy things to do. We're not telling you need to live in the crappy apartment that you lived in college for life. I mean, that's not what the point is. The point is if you have the mentality of always thinking of where those dollars are going and saying, is this something I need, want, or I'm going to get no matter what. I mean, right. You just think of it that way, because those are the evaluations we have to do on every discussion. And honestly, that's where a financial advisor helps you. If you come in and you sit down and you say, oh, you know what? I saw this bike and I'm paying $7,000 for it and I'm stopping my Roth IRA contributions. Well, you're going to have to call us to do that, because we stop those contributions for you. And if we're thinking, really, you're going to buy a bike for $7,000 and stop saving for retirement. Kind of sounds funny when you say it out loud.
Right.
So a lot of times you either won't make that phone call or you'll change your mind.
Right. The bike's not going to do you much good in 20 years.
Right.
But
yeah, that was one of Warren Buffett's favorite things. His wife wanted a couch, and it was in one of his books a long time ago. And she said, we need a new couch. And he, of course, thinks it out in an investment term. And he says, that $1,000 couch, how much is that going to have cost me in earning potential for the next 20 years?
Right. And although that's a little ridiculous given who Warren Buffett is, but it is... a thought process going back to our conversation about people taking money out of their 401ks and all that, you know, that money isn't just the money that you took out. It's the money it could have made.
Right. So a lot of this time on this hour, what we've been spending talking about is how to save, what to do. So just start to put money away. Ask for help if you're not sure what to do, how to do it to get that structure in place. There's a lot of great financial advisors out there that don't sell products. They're just trying to help people. Because we've made it a policy for where we are that we want to help everyone. We want it to be a good experience. We want that first dollar that you put into whatever investment it is for you to say, I am so glad that I did this.
Right.
So there are a lot of people that think that way out there. Some don't, but those are product people. But what I'm saying is just try to get some help. Talk about it with someone if you need to. It's a great way to get going.
Yep. And in fact, we have a caller?
Yep.
Okay.
We're going to take a call right now because that's what's fun.
Right.
Morning, Michael.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. How are you?
Just fine.
Good.
I just wanted to congratulate you on your topic. Very, very important. Personally, the thing that worked the best for me was having a budget. When I was a kid, my parents had a notebook with each month's budget.
mm-hmm.
what they were going to allocate their money to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I, when I really got serious in life, I remembered that. I thought, you know, that's a pretty smart idea, instead of just take your paycheck and go buy whatever you want, you know, actually
right.
figure out where the money needs to go.
Right. You hear the music in the background, they're going to cut us off at the top of the hour, so don't be offended if you get dropped.
Okay. And then I'll really quickly squeeze this in. Go to bikesdirect.com. And you can, yeah, I do all kinds of ways to save money.
Uh-huh.
But you can get a brand new bike, no sales tax and free shipping for a third to half the cost. You just have to put it together yourself or take it to a bike shop and pay them $100.
Awesome.
There you go.
You can get some really, really, really nice bikes.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate the tip.
Okay, bye.
Thanks,
Thank
Michael.
Bye.
We'll be back here after this break, and we'll talk about what debt priority to pay off and how you should do it.
The largest one-day festival in Idaho is back. The Idaho Lottery presents the Boise Music Festival, Saturday, June 27th at Expo Idaho. Enjoy a day packed with live music and fun in the sun. Check out local vendors and a kids' play area and tons of food choices. Plus, the Paradise Amusement Carnival. Get your unlimited rides wristband in advance at BoiseMusicFestival.com. This year, the Commercial Tire Main Stage welcomes Nick Jonas, Red Foo from LMFAO, The Ting Tings, Gloriana, The Plain White Tees, Shaggy, and Rob Thomas. Save on advance tickets at BoiseMusicFestival.com.
The Idaho Lottery presents the Boise Music Festival, Saturday, June 27th at Expo Idaho. Brought to you by Carl's Jr., U.S. Air Force, City of Boise, and Corps 14. Details at Boise Music Festival.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone. Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petso this lovely Saturday morning. We need your phone calls, though. We've had a couple. I know it's a great, beautiful day, but I know a lot of you have to be listening. So give us a call. 580-5436-580-KIDO.
You know, before we get started on our second hour, I just wanted to go back to what something Michael was saying. It was kind of funny, but it also was a really, he said a couple things that were really good about, you know, seeing your parents doing something and then you remembering, hey, I remember what my parents were doing. And now I'm grown up, so, you know, that seemed like a good idea. So it's important for, and we have some information about, you know, parenting maybe a little later, but it's important to be showing that your kids seeing you doing things, you know, and doing the right things. And so being that good example, especially like he was saying, he saw that that's what they did and that's what he did. And that's what we'll tend to do. And another thing I want to comment on is about bikes.com. If we're going to make a purchase, it doesn't have to be a pack of gum, but on most purchases that are major purchases nowadays with the internet and so forth, if we just take a little time, sit back, and really research it, we could probably be able to cut at least 20 to 30% off everything we buy. We just need to, you know, take the time to do it instead of just running out and buying it because I've decided I'm going to buy it now.
Which I know is hard, especially if you're like, oh, I've just wanted this for so long. If I can get it here, I have to wait a week. I can't wait a week.
Instant gratification.
Yeah, right. It goes back to what we've been talking about.
And it's funny, I had an older client in yesterday morning, and they just bought their brand new car. It's probably going to be their last car, and they bought brand new. And he told me about something I wasn't aware of, and maybe you aren't aware of either. But there's actually, at certain dealerships, for certain types of cars, you can get the Costco price. So Costco has arranged with these different dealers to have a pricing that's based upon cost for Costco members, and they were able to buy a car, and that, you know, they went in and said, okay, we want the Costco deal, I guess, and you get a deal on it. So I don't know exactly all the details of that, but it's just amazing. So when you're a member of AAA or you have a Costco membership or something, really find out what you got there. You might be able to save some money you didn't even realize you could.
That's so funny. It's like, we don't have to buy like 10 cars, right?
No.
And you don't have to buy both cars.
Right, you don't have to buy three.
You're going to get the Costco deal?
Right.
Jace, that's funny. Okay. So, but that kind of leads into the next topic. Probably right up there with how much do I need for retirement, the next question that we get asked a lot is, should I pay off my house?
Right.
This is really very much a personal decision, and it's very dependent on the individual and their needs. But one thing that a financial planner, financial advisor will do is they have enough experience with different types of scenarios to be able to offer you different ideas, different points of pros and cons, and hopefully guide you to the decision that you need to make. They shouldn't really tell you what to do, but more or less talk about this is what we see as a pro here, this is a con, and walk it through it with you.
Right. Unless you really see something that they're really going off the rails, then,
well, yeah.
Then it can be really a strong recommendation.
Correct. Right. But then what I like to do is sit down with someone and say, okay, so you owe $100,000 on your home. You have $500,000 in an IRA. This is one scenario. Should I take $100 out of my IRA because they're thinking dollar for dollar and pay that home off? Well, the home is at 3.5% interest or something in today's environment. I mean, the interest rates are free pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking money out of a pre-taxed account, which if you're under 59.5, there's a 10% penalty. Then the tax guy here can tell you that you throw $100,000 on your income, it's going to bump you up and you're going to owe federal and state.
Right. Well over probably most cases, 30% or 40%.
To pay off an asset at 3.
Right. And there's another one that I do for people because I always look at it from the tax perspective. You know, the interest rate on your home, if you're itemizing, so this isn't true for everyone. You have to know if you're itemizing or doing a Schedule A and deducting that interest. But whatever your tax rate, your combined tax rates are, your effective interest rate is lower than the loan rate. Because if you're at 4% and you are in a, let's say, combined state and federal tax bracket of 20% or 30% overall, then you have to deduct that tax rate from the interest rate to show really what your effective interest rate is. So it could be that you're less than 3% on that mortgage.
Right. And we never think that you should keep or get a mortgage for the tax benefit. What we're trying to say is when you go through and you try to line out what is the best use of this dollar, like we go back to every dollar has to have a purpose. Well, I want to pay off my home because I don't want to pay interest. Well, you'll give the government 40% to avoid paying less than 3. It just doesn't make any sense.
Right. And on the flip side, if you have some money there that you could be investing and earning, let's say, and we're not even getting extravagant here, let's say earning 6 or 7% on that money over time and compounding, versus paying off something that your effective rate of return will be less than 3. You wouldn't, unless now your emotion because you want to pay off the house is playing into it. But if you thought about it, just if you went to somebody and go, I'm looking to invest the money, I could invest it at a fixed rate of less than 3 or a variable rate of from 6 to 7, what would you do?
And we know a lot of people today would say, well, I'll take that 3 because the market's very scary. We understand that feeling. We also understand this is where we talk about, okay, so our feelings tell us that I want no debt because that alleviates risk, which we agree with. But this comes back to what is good debt, what is bad debt. Paying off the home, you may be paying off good debt and then taking assets that have, like Tom was saying, the potential to compound over the years to pay that off.
Yeah. Because your house isn't going to go up in value anymore, whether it's paid off or not. It's going to appreciate or depreciate all on its own. So people get caught up into this emotion. We have referred to Dave Ramsey a couple times, his program and so forth, and we think it's great for people getting out of debt, focusing on their finances, getting organized, think it's awesome. I think he's been a pioneer in that realm. But, some things about, okay, now you got past the first few baby steps, now pay off the house. That's where we differ a little bit. In some cases, it would be a good idea. Some cases, it isn't. It isn't across the board one size fits all for everybody.
And if you have, and this is where we talk again, where you go into someone and you really lay out your finances, because if you have $200,000 sitting in a money market account getting 0, you haven't refinanced your home and you're at 6, then there's another cost here, right?
Sure.
Your cash is losing money after inflation every year. You will be losing around 3% in buying power. Plus, you're paying out 6 on the other side. So there we're at 9. Does that make sense either? So there's got to be some real evaluation that goes in, and that's where a financial planner actually sits down with you and says, this is what we see as cost here, this is what we see as cost there.
And it takes the emotion out of it. It's just objective analysis.
We've actually, I personally have told people to pay off their home with their cash.
Yep.
There are people that have plenty of assets in other places, and they owe maybe $50,000 on their home. They don't owe a lot, and it's sitting in cash, and they have a good savings and a good cushion. Sometimes, especially from an emotional perspective, either their health or something else comes to play, and they just want to not have to pay out. There are times when we absolutely say pay off your home, so don't get us wrong.
Right.
We don't always say, oh, yeah, take debt, keep debt, blah, blah, blah. That's not what we're saying here. What we're trying to say is what is the best use of every dollar that you have?
Right. And if you want to take it to a different level or another way of looking at it, too, is cash flow.
Right.
You know, we can sit here and talk to you and have a spreadsheet and show you, you know, financially, this is the best thing to do. You should invest the money and don't pay off the debt and or don't take this loan go ahead and take the loan, whatever the case may be. But the thing is that if you can't afford the payment, if it's too much of your cash flow, whether it makes a great sense to invest the money on paper or not, you can't, the debt it has to be paid off or it has to be reduced because it just too much of the, if you become bankrupt because you're trying to make this payment, that isn't going to help you financially either. So it's two ways. You have to look at it both ways and go, okay, does it fit within my cash flow? And what am I going to be doing with the rest of my, because like you were saying, if you're just going to stash it and put it in the bank and earn less than 1% or even less after inflation, then it's maybe a 200% better return there. But if you can get yourself to invest the money over time, then that probably will work out best. It just, you have to be able to live with your plan and work the plan.
And back to the cash flow thing, too, that Tom's talking about. A lot of times people say, well, my cash flow will be enough that I'll just take and invest the house payment. So you take the asset out, then you're going to replace it with payments. But how long did it take you to get that lump sum?
Right.
Compounding is an amazing thing. So if you have $100,000, if it, like we talked about, rule of 72 doubles in 10, if you get 7, right, that 100 becomes 2. Do you think you're going to be able in the next 10 years to put away $200,000?
Right, when you already had it.
Right. So those are the big deals. You got to be sure that what you're doing really makes financial sense for you. Does it make sense to take the money out just to pay off a debt? Does it not? So sitting down with someone because they have absolutely no vested interest in this in any way, shape, or form is the best thing to do.
Right. And another thing that kind of counteracts this too is that don't take this to every debt situation, right?
Right.
If you have credit card debt and you go, yeah, but I'm only paying 1%, you know, for 6 months or I'm doing this, that isn't what we're saying. It's like, oh, yeah, that's smart debt because I'm paying less than I could be investing. Credit card debt, you should not carry a balance. There isn't that works out, so we're going to, yeah, just run them up a little bit, right? But we're only talking about basically a mortgage situation on your personal real estate,
right.
not credit card debt or some other kind of consumer debt.
But with that, do not take your retirement to pay off credit card either. Stop using the credit card. You don't know how many times, not as much as it used to be, people play the credit card game.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, I've got this other one that I found that's 0% interest if I transfer a balance to it, so I'm going to move that, and then blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, as much time as you're taking to figure out this credit card game,
you could have paid them off.
Yeah.
Right.
Or spend that time focusing on your finances and getting them in order.
Right. Use all that energy to get your life in order instead of just trying to, like you're saying, play the game. And what will happen is you'll keep doing that, and then someone will go, hey, you know what you can do? My uncle did this. Take a loan out against your 401k because then you pay yourself back. So it's even better interest that way.
Which, they always remember, you pay back 401k loans with after-tax dollars. So if you're in a 25% tax bracket, that's 25% interest
right
off. And then they also do charge something.
Right.
So when you think about that, and you're out of the market. So think of all these different things that compound on that. So it's probably the worst loan in the world for people.
Right. And you're adding a different type of risk because if you lose your job, then you have to pay it back within 60 days. And if you don't, then you have early withdrawal penalty and blah, blah, blah. You just get in this vicious cycle. So whenever we have this type of debt, get rid of the debt, pay it off, and don't keep incurring it. That's the magic of this. not trying to find the better and best deal this month so we can move all our balances to it.
Right. So really think about what you're doing. Ask for help if you need it, but don't try not to go to family, because a lot of times everyone tells me that wants to take their Social Security. Well, my neighbor said take it at 62. And I'm like, based on what? Well, you know, we're not going to have it, so I better take it now.
Right.
That's really not an answer, because that goes into a whole different topic. But what I'm saying is, don't get advice from people that you may feel are more successful than you but really aren't.
Right.
You can talk about it. Get ideas from people, because if they are more successful and you can see that, not by the amount of toys and the size of their house and everything that goes with that, but actually seem to be responsible, you talk about it. But then get some unbiased advice, too.
Yeah. One of the millionaire habits that, you know, we've been reading about, talking about, is having a lot of different types of advisors and having a group of advisors that you go to. So instead of just going to one, you go to two or three and try to figure out, oh, he says this, and he brought up a good point, and he brought up a good point, and you come up to a better conclusion than just going to one person that might have a biased opinion toward one thing or the other and are not going to be that objective.
And you do really need to balance everything. Having no debt going into retirement, or not bad debt. I mean, if you still have a little bit on your home, we see that more and more just because of the way it is. But if you've completely paid off your home and you have no assets, you're kind of locked here. What do you do? Then you end up taking a reverse mortgage or selling your home and having to downsize. So also look at it that way. What are we trying to do with this? Do we want to have no debt and then work forever?
Right.
Or do we try to balance it and have all bad debt, no credit cards, cars paid for, everything paid off except maybe a small mortgage, and then you have assets to help you? And even with the whole, well, I want to take money out to do this, maybe you use your investments to help pay the mortgage.
Right.
So if cash flow gets tough, like Tom was talking about, and you have assets, maybe instead of taking a ginormous chunk out and paying that debt completely off, maybe you take a little bit to help bridge that time, because, you know, you'll get raises. You'll get a better job. Maybe you'll sell that house and get something a little more affordable. So don't make a permanent decision when there may be small tweaks that you can do to make it better.
Right. And I think the most important thing we're talking about is everybody's situation is different. And you need to make sure that just because someone said on the radio or some, except for this radio program, or we read in the paper or we read in a book and it says, here's the five different steps. And some of those, like we've been talking about before, are the basic ones. But some of them, sometimes there's different circumstances that afford different type of thought process. So really think these things through, especially when they're major things, because paying off your house, doing all this kind of thing, isn't something that you just do every day, right?
Right.
It's something you should think through.
Right. And the easy answer may not be the obvious answer. And don't always go with just the, oh, well, this will be better. I just got to do this. Stop and think about those decisions.
Especially if your emotions are causing you to feel that way. Because if you really are feeling that way, that's probably where you need to check yourself a little bit and say, you know what? I need to go out and talk to this because I feel too strongly about this right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So we're going to take a break. And we need phone calls. We've only had two. We usually do better than this.
I know. This is like a Dave.
I know.
Program,
and we're always bragging. We go back and say, we got all these calls. And he's.
Yeah.
So anyways, give us a call. 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Pezzo today. We've been talking about good debt, bad debt, how to become financially successful, just a few different topics today. So we'd like to continue on with that just a little bit more, and then we'll go into another interesting topic. But we do want phone calls, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Almost forgot the number there. So what we were talking about was debt. But before we go on that a little bit further, we're going to take a call.
Oh.
Terry?
Hi, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Very good. So my wife is the one that's providing right now our health care, and she is losing her benefits as of this coming Friday.
Mm.
And we're healthy, and so right now we're not going to do anything about health care because I don't see anything being affordable. And my right now I'm working a job that isn't paying very much, so my thought is just not to do anything with healthcare right now. Your opinions or your what would you guys say?
Well, here's what I say on that. You can be extremely healthy and then accidents happen. Do you have any sort of money set aside? Because I'm going to point to the guy over here that was talking about an Achilles rupture a year ago. He's healthy. He runs marathons, right? But then he had a little small playing basketball with the neighbor incident, and he ruptured his Achilles. So those are nothing that you can predict. Or, I mean, those kind of things happen in life, and those were lots of money to get that rupture repaired. So the risk to not being insured at all is pretty high.
Well, so let's say you bring in $3,000 a month total, and you're not really making any other money, and you have a house and you have all these things, what would you do?
Well, so, you know, a couple things here. How old are you, Terry?
61.
61, your wife?
59.
You had to hesitate there.
Didn't want to get in trouble. So
you're not listening.
So the thing that I've talked to people about a lot is that, you know, there are a few things that, you know, can just devastate your finances, and one is medical cost, and it's one of those things where we're just going to roll the dice and not do that. And if you think about it, we don't have any coverage whatsoever, and all of a sudden, just like Jennifer's mentioning, something comes out of the blue, whether it's, you know, something like that happened to me, or a car accident, or cancer, or something that you just, 2 weeks ago, there was nothing. Now today, your life is upside down. That's why we have insurance, to cover those huge medical or costly things that there's no way we could save as much money as we need. And I don't want to be, and it kind of hurts me here a little bit, but to be promoting Obamacare too much, but I would go and talk to a health insurance agent and find out what you qualify for, because if you have lower income, you qualify for subsidies, and those subsidies can help you pay the premiums. And because I do taxes, I saw a lot of people that had used the health insurance exchange, and was able to get some help with some or all of the premium cost. Now, am I a big fan of that program? No, but it does exist, and it might benefit you, because, you know, it isn't. Well, I'm not concerned about you having something where you get sick and you have a couple $1,000 of bills. But if there was something major, I mean, that'd be $60,000 to $100,000. I mean, at $3,000, how are we going to recover? You haven't started taking Social Security, but you're not going to have enough. You could have lifetime bills that would bankrupt you quickly. So that's what I'm saying is, it's too big a risk. It's just too much. If you could live in a bubble and guarantee yourself that, but no one can. So I would do that. I think it would be prudent for you to find out. If you choose to roll the dice, at least you know what your alternatives are, instead of just going, we're just going to not worry about it. Because it could be, especially even if it's a high deductible plan, if you have coverage that would cover you over $10,000 or whatever, I think it's $14,000 the max out of pocket. I mean, those are things that are doable to survive from. A major issue, it would. I don't see how you could recover.
Right.
So what happens with the? I remember when they first rolled it out that you could pay a penalty and automatically enroll into the plan. Is that sort of thing possible? I mean, so you don't have it right now, but you could get it and then you're enrolled.
If something happens, like go back and say, I meant to have insurance? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
I think that, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs enough to just tell you exactly how all the details work, but I would make this call first thing Monday morning and find somebody. Going to the exchange, I don't know, when you don't have a lot of, you know, knowledge, and I wouldn't go to the exchange myself. I'd go to a professional, and there's plenty of them out there, that it doesn't cost any extra for them to go to the exchange for you. I would do that. And like I said, you go through the process and you choose not to have coverage, then that's your call. But but at least you know that maybe there's some alternative out there that it won't cost you arm and leg. And another thing, with your wife quitting, you might qualify for COBRA coverage under her work, but it's going to be pretty expensive. So
that's almost astronomical.
Yeah, right, right.
Well, but, well, one of the things that I found, too, is, you know, just the horror stories abound with Obamacare as far as the Affordable Care Act, as far as the propensity for identity theft and everything else. I hesitate to even touch their website because it's just scary.
Yeah, that's why I don't know if factually about the identity theft issue, but I would say if you go to a health insurance person, then you're not then you're alleviating that you'd going directly to the exchange and
right.
and so forth. So and again, it's just getting information at this point. It isn't that you're signing up day one, but you are getting the information out there so you can find out what you qualify for. I would do that at least because
they may go out on the exchange for you. We don't know how all that works, right. but I don't. And they've got to button down the identity theft piece of it. The security is going to have to, you know what I mean? And it's one of those things,
well,
though, the risk.
I know, but that's why I'm not rushing out to like, oh, yeah.
But no, I'm more concerned, right. but you know, those kind of things that they'll, that's recoverable. If anybody steals your identity, you will be made whole. If you get in an accident and there's cost for medical, that's more concerning to me because there's no one that's going to come in and fix that for you. So, I mean, the risk there, the risk reward of someone stealing your identity and maybe you have a hassle to fix it, that's fixable. The medical isn't.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, yeah. You know what? I appreciate your point of view very much. Thank you.
You're welcome,
Terry. No problem,
Terry. Uh-huh.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, please give us more calls. That's the fun part of this, is to talk with people and hear their stories. Our phone number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. On 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone with Tom Brown, and we're filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Again, we'd love your phone calls at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Wanted to touch back on something we were talking about a little bit before our call, and that was on homes. Some of the issues with when we're trying to find ways to make the payment or increase cash flow is maybe you bought too much of a house.
Right.
So Tom has some really interesting ratios to keep in mind when you're taking on debt of how much maybe that mortgage should be.
Right. And this goes to all debt plus mortgage debt. But what we recommend, and we talked about this, because if you go on the internet, you read books and so forth, there's always this thing about what income to use. But there's a mortgage to debt to income ratio that Jennifer and I decided that one we were going to utilize or that we thought was more appropriate. And we say that your mortgage payment should not be more than 25% of your take-home pay. Now, I was just out this morning double-checking some of these things, and quite a few websites were saying 28%, which I think is the general thing for mortgage companies, but they were using your gross pay before taxes and so forth. And we decided it's a truer number to try to, you know, if we're going to be truly conservative, if we're doing 25% of your take home, that's more real because so many things are taken out before that. And, you know, you're not going to say, hey, I'm going to pay a little bit more on my house because, you know, I have so much withheld for federal taxes. So, but if you wanted to use gross, that's fine. But have a number, and we're saying 25%. So when you do your budget, your net worth statement, your income statement, figuring out where you are currently, see where you are. See if you have more of a mortgage payment than you need. If you do, then that shows that you have a little bit of a red flag, something to work on. Another thing is overall debt. Overall debt, and this is also based upon your take-home pay, take your total annual debt payments, so add everything up that you do for the year, and divide it by your total annual take-home pay. We're saying that you should not have more than 45% going out to payments in general. that include your mortgage, car payments, credit cards, whatever. It should not exceed 45%. So see where you are there. And then breaking that down a little bit more, taking out the mortgage, we're saying do not have more than 15% going to non-mortgage debt. So of that 45, don't have over 15%. So as you can see, there's a little bit of wiggle room there because the 45% plus the 25, well, you know, we have a 5% bogey there, but it's important to have some sort of guidelines, know where we're at. And if you run these numbers, run these ratios, and you see that you're over in one area, then that's an area that you need to work on. Then you know, okay, in the next 6 months, we're going to get a ratio down for our mortgage debt, or it's a little bit harder, but for our non-mortgage debt, we're at 22%. Our goal at the end of the year, we're going to try to get that down to the 15 number. And so these guidelines, these types of ratios help us know where we have our weak points and where we have our strong points.
And to add to that a little bit, the reason we decided to use the take-home pay versus gross is you should be paying yourself first out of your paycheck into any employment accounts that you have. So what you have left is truly what you have to spend. This is why we say use what you bring home and use those numbers. They're more conservative. Plus, we don't want anyone stopping their 401k contributions to increase their take-home pay. That money is untouchable, so we want to use the money that you have, not the money that you could have. So that's why we like to use the take-home pay.
Right. And you're always gonna, if you did that and you stay within that, then you're going to be fine. I mean, conceivably. So that's why we like to be as conservative as we can with these, because the more conservative you are in these ratios, the better you can be and have more money left over.
Okay, we're going to take a break so we can get caught up here. Our phone number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. With Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I am Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Talking a little bit about saving habits, how to become independently wealthy, all those fun topics. But now there's one that we found, and it's an article that's been floating around a little bit out there, so you may have seen it. But it talks about your kids, and it's from a Rich Habits website. And it was from 2013, but a lot of the topic was still very good to talk about. So we wanted to go through it.
Way back in 2013.
I know, that was years ago. I mean, come on, in the instant world we live in, right? So we wanted to go through some of these things because they're very interesting and kind of fun to read through. So we're going to do that now and finish off the hour that way. But also, if you have a phone call, feel free to interrupt us. Phone number is 580-KIDO or 580-5436. And you can still send us an email at petzofinancial@petzofinancial.net. May not reply to it right now during the time when we're on air, but we'll get to you, promise. So, anyways, will your child be rich or poor? They're habits that we need to work with our kids on to teach them just good financial habits.
And you know what's funny about this is it says, will your child be rich or poor? But a lot of these could apply to anyone. You know, it's these type of habits that we need to be paying attention to for ourselves also.
Right. So a question to ask yourself, because obviously you can't reply directly to us. So do you want to be financially successful in life? I mean, what are your goals? Do you think you will be? Can you be? How do you really truly feel about money, about saving? Do you find that money is something you don't even care about and you don't want? You're just going to work for the rest of your life, which we've heard, until something happens and you can't. But what does money truly mean to you, and what does it do for your life? It's funny because you get both sides of the story here, where people say money's a bad thing because it makes you think only about money. Then other people say, well, I have to have money for comfort. Well, money should give you comfort. It shouldn't be an end-all be-all. That's why you should give to charity. You should be giving with your money if you have it, because that relieves that whole, all I'm going to do is focus on money. But you have to have money to be able to do those things.
Right, right. It's, you know, this article brings it out, is that more and more our children are coming back from school and their teachers or friends or whoever is kind of the thought process is that focusing on building wealth and so forth is a bad thing, that you're evil, that you're one of those people that all you think about is trying to build money. or think about money, but it isn't. It should be something that we strive to be as an American.
Right. And it's what this country was built on.
Right.
Is being independently wealthy, being able to do things on your own, having the freedom to do so. So it is important. It is important to be able to take care of yourself, but now also the thing that we're trying to teach kids is so they can take care of themselves and not stay at home for the rest of their life.
Right. Right. Nothing ruins a retirement plan worse than a 30-year-old son still sleeping on the couch.
Exactly. And on, you're still supporting them, and you're working hard, and they're enjoying your retirement.
Right. Right.
Right. All right. We're going to take a call real quick from Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Morning. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
Yeah. Money has never meant very much to me. I was lucky in the fact that back in the 60s, my father put me through college. But back then, of course, it only cost $200. This was out-of-state tuition in Texas. I'm from New Mexico.
Right.
It only cost $200 per semester. So I get out, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. I got a degree in accounting because he was a CPA. But I'm thinking, okay, I wanted to get out and explore life. So I went to California, and I lucked out considerably. I got a job with Bank of America, and, you know, they asked me what I thought my career goals were. Well, I didn't have any. I just told them I liked to travel. So just like that, they put me in an international. So I worked myself around South America and the Caribbean for a year and a half. And then I come back, and then later I'm thinking, you know, a regular job was not me. So I've always loved music, and I discovered a drum and bugle corps. So for four summers, I traveled with them. So anyway, I worked my way along, and, you know, I mean, that was the fun of it. And then luckily, later in life, my father left me what he had worked like a dog, you know, made a lot of money and saved, and he was wise and all that. So I've got his money, and now I figure I'm managing it. I'm thrifty. I don't blow a lot of stuff. And all this technology stuff, it's kind of like Dave loves Apple, right? Well, it's kind of like you might go up to somebody that bought the latest Apple product and say, why did you buy that? And the guy would probably say, because they put it out.
Right, right. Absolutely. And you have to have it. Oh, I fall in that category. Right. I hate to admit it, but I do.
Yeah. People don't know, well, it's the latest app. You know, the what they need, what they want is inconsequential these days.
Yep. Yep, I agree. But you did make a very good point, too, about passion. You will be more successful in whatever you do if you have a passion for what you're doing.
Right.
Yeah, working at a regular job just was not me. And yet I tried to do it because it was kind of like what you were supposed to do.
Right.
And so finally, back in 1977, I said, to hell with it. And I got a good job that was, you know, gave me flexibility. And I just got on with the drum and bugle corps, traveled the country, listened to all sorts of music, helped kids. It was great.
Right, right. Yeah, I totally understand. That's why we like what we do so much.
I mean, everybody. And see, that's the definition of success.
Right.
Now I had a classmate. I mean, she was the brain. She was known. I was number 89th in the class of 284 or something like that. She had to be number one.
Right.
So she goes out. She gets a PhD. She's teaching English at Smith in Massachusetts, and she never comes to any of the class reunions. Okay, so finally, you see, we're both 69, or she was. I'm still 69. She was 68 at the time, I guess. But anyway, we're getting ready for our 50th class reunion, and she, you know, I'm told that she was the first one to sign up for it, and she died of pneumonia the month before.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, that's terrible.
So she may think, you know, she probably has a wing on Smith, but, you know, whatever. She's gone, and I'm here.
Exactly.
So, anyway.
Well, thanks, Jim.
Anyway, I mean, so far before my call, I mean, you, let's face it, you've outpaced Dave in his usual call.
You know, we rub that in every time.
You know, Jim, there's a constant in all those because you're always one of the calls, whether it's ours or his.
Yes, you help us out all the time.
Well, this time I was going to lay back until you mentioned the thing of, you know, basically what is success.
Right.
I mean, you know, you look back in your life, and I'm extremely lucky. But my thing was just not to have a goal, really, just to get out there, experience life, and see. It's kind of like I'm in a sailboat, and the wind was blowing in the sails, but I had no rudder. And now, unfortunately, after you get to this ripe old age, even the wind stops.
Right.
So the is kind of, you know, it's you know, the golden years kind of a thing is BS.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you could have all sorts of money, but if you're not, you know, doing things exciting, what good is it?
Absolutely.
So.
All right, Jim.
Take care.
You too. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jim is one just a talking a bumper sticker.
Yes, he's,
you know,
good.
You just cut like all those and just put them all over.
Yeah, yourself. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. All right, so I'm going to just, we're going to finish up here with a couple of interesting statistics because we only have a couple minutes left, but I thought these were great. 5-year study on daily habits that separate the wealthy from the poor. 72% of the wealthy know their credit score versus 5% of the poor. Knowing your credit score, I don't know if it's that big of a deal. I mean, that's all that means is you can pay back money. But the whole thing is they're financially aware of where they're at.
Right. They're taking the time to, even if it isn't the most important number in their financial life, they're taking the time to figure it out.
Correct. 6%, and I like this one because we were laughing about this Friday, 6% of the wealthy play the lottery versus 77% of the poor. So it seems like the financial plan for some 77% of the people is to win the lottery.
I just want to know where the other 17% of those people are, because that's only 83. So that must be the middle.
That don't know?
Yeah.
What is the lottery? Right?
Maybe I played it. Maybe I
don't know. 80% of the wealthy are focused on at least one goal versus 12% of the poor. That's a big deal right there. That's what we've been talking about. Got to have goals.
And it's funny, Jim said he didn't have a goal, but he actually did. He said he wanted to go and do what he wanted to do.
Right.
That's a big goal.
It's a huge goal.
It's a huge goal. And maybe he didn't write it down, but that's a big goal.
Absolutely. 62% of the wealthy, and this is funny because I have a friend that's a very good friend that's a dental hygienist, and this was her favorite one. 62% of the wealthy floss their teeth every day. Right. Versus 16% of the poor.
And I actually know that Dave went to a conference and they said one of the most effective things you can do for your finances is floss your teeth, take care of your teeth, because there are so many health conditions that result from not taking care of your teeth.
Right, right. 21% of the wealthy are overweight by 30 pounds or more versus 66% of the poor. That's, again, focusing, being disciplined, taking care of yourself, exercising, eating. It just goes back to discipline.
Yep.
Right? 63% of the wealthy spend less than 1 hour per day on recreational internet use versus 26% of the poor. 83% of the wealthy attend or attended back-to-school night for their kids versus 13% of the poor. 29% of the wealthy had one or more children who made the honor roll versus 4% of the poor. 63% of wealthy listened to audiobooks during their commute versus 5% of the poor. 67% of the wealthy watch 1 hour or less of TV per day versus 23% of the poor. This one's funny, too. 9% of the wealthy watch reality TV show versus 78% of the poor.
And I'm not going to mention and talk about that one.
Someone we know that watches at Gold Rush. Yeah, we won't go there.
Anymore,
yeah.
Because we cut back on our DirecTV and we don't have that channel anymore.
Right. Well, we're not going to have time to finish the rest of these up. Again, great article. You can find it if you go out there and Google. It was just some interesting statistics. Most of them just led back to being disciplined and focused. So thank you for your time this morning, I guess. Tom, good luck today. I'm sure you'll do really well. And enjoy your weekend,
everyone.
All I
have to do is survive.
There you go. Have a great weekend.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzl Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzl, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzl Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzl and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.